Happy Tuesday to you, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. She's Michelle Knezovic. I'm Chase McCabe, the reporter Nick Keezer behind the glass. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. A big show ahead for you. Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach, going to join us at 10:15. Really looking forward to chatting with him. Rand Carthon was on yesterday with Caroline Willie and D-Mace, so we get the coach to talk about the draft picks that will be coming in here, and also the undrafted free agents as they're bringing that in. There's been some reports of some guys getting invites to rookie camp, so it is an exciting time for sure in the National Football League and with the Titans, but looking forward to having Vrabes on here in just a little bit. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning. Doing well this morning. Excited to have Mike Vrabel on in just about an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
15, he'll join us.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. So looking forward to that. But obviously the big conversation is going to be, and you know, I'm going to ask Mike about how he coaches the pressure that all these draft picks go through, because they all have different types of pressure that they deal with. Mike Vrabel had different pressure as a third round pick. Rand Carthon had different pressure as an undrafted free agent. They all go through it differently. And so I'm curious of his answer, but there's pressure on everybody. There's pressure to win in the National Football League each and every year. With this franchise, there is pressure to win a Super Bowl for the first time in its history. There is pressure to put the best team together each year, but also to put a really good team together to open a new stadium in about 4 years. That it all comes together. And one of the big things that has come up is now that the Titans have drafted their perceived quarterback of the future in Will Levis, how much of that success is tied to, I'll say, Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel, and the ultimate success of the future of this team? I would say it's quite a bit, because that's you got to do something that John Robinson never got to do, draft that quarterback of the future.
Yeah, I mean, Rand Carthon's opening press conference when he got
in the first two rounds, I should say.
When he got hired as a general manager, he said, "You get hired and fired in this league." And he related that to quarterback play and to drafting quarterbacks. I mean, over the last couple of years, we've seen the quarterback position just grow immensely. I mean, even when it was the group of Ben Roethlisberger and Peyton Manning, and I mean, I know some of them are still playing, like Rodgers, I'll throw in there, Tom Brady. Right now you have the new era of them. You've got the Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allen, the Joe Burrow, the Justin Herbert, and if you don't have one of those guys, you're left out. I mean, history proves that if you have elite quarterback play, your Super Bowl window really doesn't ever close, because the position is so incredibly important. I mean, you can look back 20-plus years and it's okay, start at the line, have a solid offensive line, quarterback throws from the pocket. But now the position has just evolved into, you know, are you a playmaker? Can you, you know, adjust on the fly? And it just goes with, you know, the level of football, right? I mean, it's just increased over, you know, the last couple of years. But it's true. You get hired and fired in this league in if you are winning or losing. And quarterback play is a huge pivotal part of it. It really is. So, you know, when you say, is their success tied to Will Levis? I mean, I guess there are still other ways that it couldn't be, right? I mean, could you, a couple years down the line, a quarterback want to go to Tennessee, things like that. But, I mean, if Will Levis is extremely successful and he becomes your franchise quarterback and you're winning and you are in a Super Bowl window for his career, I mean, it looks a lot better on those two than if it's not.
Yeah. And look, I think my mindset, because, you know, we sit here and we talk about this team each and every day, 365 days a year, it, for you, 6 days a week. and you know, but I grew up here. I'm a fan of the team. I want the team to be successful. And so I look at it as when he's successful, when he becomes the franchise quarterback. That's my hope, because – you know, I mean, you went through this with me of my up and down. Okay, I'm drinking the Levis Kool-Aid, the blue Kool-Aid, and then I kind of moved to the Florida orange Kool-Aid.
No, then it was Hendon Hooker, and then it was Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, and you know, and that's just kind of the the craziness that happens in the draft. But ultimately, I like the pick. I like Skoronski. I like Tajay Spears. See, I almost said Sharp, and I'm blaming YouTube for that. I like Spears, you know. And then the other guys that is a wait and see. You know, I don't really know that much about. And that's another thing we'll ask Mike Vrabel about. But ultimately, I want this to work. I want them to be right. You know, I like Mike Vrabel. I like Rand Carthon. I want them to be right. And time will tell if they have the pieces and can put the pieces around Levis to make him successful. Because like Ryan Tannehill, right now, I do believe you're going to have to be great around him. And so that is going to be the next step in all of this. But Rand Carthon was on Caroline Willie and D-Mace yesterday to kind of discuss his first draft. And he did speak on passing on Levis at 11, but still being able to get him.
So if you do feel that way, why pass on Will Levis at 11?
You know, first of all, I think Will will determine what his future is here. You know, we're just in the business of, you know, acquiring good football players and letting them work it out from there. You know, passing on him at 11, you know, we've talked about, did not think that a player that we liked, like Peter, you know, would be there for us at 11. He was a player that we thought highly of, that we had highly rated, and just didn't think he would be there in 11. And when he was, it was just an easy choice.
You know what that answer tells me, Michelle? It tells me that while we went through this whole little song and dance, and I do believe they were trying to move up to 3 and they were going to draft C.J. Stroud. I believe that 100%. But they also recognize that offensive line, we probably should do something about that. And I think that was – I think that maybe they knew – obviously they knew a little bit more than we did and kind of felt, all right, let's roll the dice because – we want to try and get a quarterback. We like Levis. He may fall. And so let's just roll the dice. Let's get the need in Skoronski, and then we'll circle back to it later, and that's what they did.
Yeah, and, I mean, we also talk about 2024, if they passed on him because, I mean, a lot of people didn't think Skoronski would drop out of the top 10. A lot of people thought the Bears would take him at 9, Northwestern guy. They need to beef up their offensive line as well. He's regarded as one of the – best offensive lineman in this year's draft, a versatile guy. So you look at the situation and you think, okay, if they were going to move up to 3, the whole C.J. Stroud thing is kind of on the side here. You pass at Will Levis at 11, you get your offensive lineman because at the end of the day, you're going to need a top lineman, whether Ryan Tannehill is your quarterback or whether you have a rookie quarterback next year. It's going to be a guy who's going to be a pivotal piece of this organization, you hope, for the next 10 years. You hope, you know, you can build a line by drafting guys, especially since drafting a Dylan Raidens and an Isaiah Wilson a couple years ago. You know, you missed on those. So you need to start drafting a top offensive lineman in this draft. And I think they looked at Peter Skoronski. They obviously viewed him and regarded him very high in this draft. But then as the picks continue to get in, I mean, there were reports from Tom Pelissero that said teams are trying to trade back into the first round. And the Tennessee Titans benefited that Will Levis fell into the second day because then, you know, first off, it's a second round pick, so you don't have to give up as much draft capital. You don't have that fifth-year option, but if you truly viewed him as a guy who could be a franchise quarterback, specifically your franchise quarterback, you got your lineman who you hope to have for the next 10 years.
Yep.
And now you have a rookie quarterback who you didn't give too much up for. You have started to add pieces to your line. Ryan Tannehill play for another year. He can learn behind him. And I also look at it from Will Levis's perspective, and, you know, there's not as much pressure. You know, when you're drafted where C.J. Stroud was drafted or where Anthony Richardson was drafted, you know, Bryce Young, there is so much pressure on you. You know, I look at the Mitch Trubisky's of the world, the Baker Mayfields of the world, you know, the guys who are drafted. Yeah. And how often does it actually work out?
So I think that is a really interesting point that you have brought up because I disagree with you. I think there is pressure. I think it's a different kind of pressure on Levis But think about this, and you have, this is great because you've led me right down of something I want to ask Mike Vrabel. The pressure that he is dealing with is he spent 3-4 months hearing first round pick, and then as late as the day of the draft, top two pick, and he ends up falling to the second round. So now there's a different kind of pressure of, oh, okay, hold my beer. Let me show all of you teams, all of the teams, including the Titans, that you were wrong to pass on me in the first round. It's just like, you know, D-Mace had that mentality. Like, that's why D-Mace had a near Hall of Fame career, because he was a fourth-round pick, and he was like, let me show y'all why y'all messed up.
Yeah. I look at that as pressure, but more chip on your shoulder.
It's still pressure.
More, I'm going to prove you wrong, not pressure of you have to be this great because this is what we invested in you.
See, I think it's even more of that. I mean, I think, look, he's a quarterback in basically he was the 33rd overall pick, so you can call that close to the first round, but still second. And he's being drafted as the guy. So I mean, how is that not pressure? That's pressure in my mind. That
no, I know it's pressure, but it's not as much as if you're Bryce Young, number one overall, you got to start day one.
Right.
You got to start winning. If you're CJ Stroud, you got to start day one.
I mean, Levis could hypothetically start day one. I don't think he's going to. I hope he doesn't, but hypothetically,
yeah,
he could. What do you think? 615-737-1025. How much of Will Levis's success is connected to? All right, we'll dictate the future of the Tennessee Titans. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Also, just seeing this from Adam Schefter, the Packers and Jordan Love have agreed on a one-year contract extension worth up to $22.5 million, including $13.5 fully guaranteed. I think that tells you right there, Jordan Love is QB1 for the Green Bay Packers. Mike Vrabel coming up at 10:15. We'll take your calls and texts on Will Levis next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
So how would that apply to quarterback for a guy like Will Levis? Because that's what a lot of people were saying. Well, the talent drop-off around him was different last year as opposed to 2 years ago.
Well, I think for Will, it was, you know, it was a bunch of different things that came in. You know, he had a new offensive coordinator. You know, he played through some injuries, you know, had a young receiving core, you know, and all those things. You know, what happened at Kentucky, you know, obviously we don't have a hand in that. We can't, you know, say anything to that. But our job, you know, will be and continue to be to surround him with as many great players, you know, as possible, because it's just not one person that's going to, you know, win a ball game for us. It's going to be everybody. So it's our job to, no matter what his skill level is or how great, you know, we think or he thinks he can be, we just have to continue to surround him with great players.
Ran Carthon yesterday on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Back here, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Kieser. Mike Vrabel coming up at 10:15 here on the show. And if you miss any of that interview with Rand Carthon, check it out at thegamenashville.com. So discussing, will the future of the club all be connected to the success of Will Levis? I think it's yes. I mean, I think that with a franchise quarterback, which is what you're hoping that you got. I mean, you know, last year, yes, John Robinson did draft Malik Willis, but he drafted him in the third round. I think that was more of a flyer on let's see what happens. And I guess hypothetically that could still pan out, but with them going ahead and drafting Levis, that kind of tells you, I think, what you need to know. Mm-hmm. And how they view the future of this team. So I think it's a really interesting question to ask. But as Carthon addressed in that clip, you know, you look at 2021 at Kentucky, a lot more talent around him, and then last year, not as much. He also was hurt. So that was a part of it too. But one thing that I've really, really liked in learning about him and hearing about the process is how they had him watch clips of interceptions and mistakes and how he, you know, what he saw and how he gets better from that.
Well, yeah, Albert Breer put out that when he came on his visit here to Nashville to meet with Vrabel and Carthon and their staff, they wanted him to put a video montage together of a bunch of his turnovers or interceptions and explain to them, okay, here's what I was thinking. Here's what went wrong. This is why I did that. And basically walk them through. And I know if you look at it from a teaching perspective, I mean, if they can point out their mistakes and explain to you, hey, here's what I was trying to do. This is what I did wrong. I mean, at least they know. I feel like that's the first step in learning to change something. You can recognize what you were doing wrong and what was going on in that situation so he could explain it to them. Does it look still great that even in the 2021 season when they had a great offense, he still had 13 interceptions?
Mm-hmm.
No, and that's something that people don't talk a lot about.
Yeah.
Although the offense looked a lot more efficient. I think they were top five offense in the SEC as a whole. They had a Wandale Robinson, who now is on the Giants in his second year. They had three offensive linemen who are now in the NFL. They obviously had Will Levis, Chris Rodriguez, running back. I mean, they had a lot of great pieces, but the turnovers were still an issue for him. So, you know, when you have him do an exercise like that, it probably gives the coaches more insight on, okay, you know, how do we coach that? How do we teach that? Can we coach it out of him? Can we teach him to do X, Y, and Z instead of what he's doing now that can help that? I mean, they drafted him, so obviously, you know, they believe that Charles Lindon and Tim Kelly can help with those things.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I think Charles Lindon's going to be the key to a lot of this. And, you know, can he be this quarterback developer that maybe they haven't had, you know, in the last few years? So that is really going to be the thing to watch. But that, again, all those things that you just said is why I think it would be so beneficial for Will to sit for a year and just learn and mm-hmm. watch. And, you know, if you do end up carrying three quarterbacks, which I kind of hope they do, and I think the next round of owners' meetings, I believe that rule is going to be talked about of where they could potentially
hang on
to
three.
Oh, they need to have it.
Especially after we saw what happened with the 49ers. And they almost had to throw Christian McCaffrey out there.
Yeah, and what we saw here with the Titans, you know? I mean,
they could have had Logan Woodside and Malik Willis.
Right. So I do kind of hope that gets approved is what I'm trying to say. But 615-737-1025, taking your calls and your texts on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, including the ones on Will Levis. Let's say hello to Brent, who has called in. Brent, what's up?
Morning, Brent.
Hey guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I think that Will walks and talks and sort of looks like he could be a franchise quarterback, but, you know, nobody knows about these young men until they've been in the league, you know, at least 1 or 2 years. And it's, you know, until the last 5 or 6 or 7 years that we throw these guys in, if they're in the first round, you know, they go to a bad team and they're starting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a train wreck waiting to happen. And then back in the day when I started watching football, rookies never started. You know, they were sitting behind somebody for 1 or 2 or 3 years. And that goes back to Brady, Rodgers, on and on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that Will landed in a great spot. He's got a great arm. We'll see about his head. And if he can sit behind Tannehill, who is a very better-than-average quarterback, I think he lucked out, personally, and wound up with the Titans. And whether he's got the leadership and all that stuff, you know, the coaches are going to have a good idea about that just on seeing how he conducts himself in the next year staying behind Tannehill, mm-hmm. you know, if the team embraces him. So I don't know. I feel pretty good about it.
All right, Brent, appreciate the call. Thank you.
I am completely on the same page as Brent, and I think he brought up a really, really good point, and our very own Joe Rexroad wrote an article about it, and it's where quarterbacks get drafted and looking at their draft class. I mean, for instance, Patrick Mahomes, yes, he was a first rounder. He was 8 spots after Mitch Trubisky. Josh Allen, he was first round. He was 6 spots after Baker Mayfield, 4 after Sam Darnold. I mean, you can go through these drafts. Lamar Jackson, 22 spots after Josh Rosen. Jalen Hurts, second round, 27 spots after Jordan Love. I mean, you can go through the draft and find instances where these guys who do get drafted in 1, 2, 3, 4, they're going to teams who the year prior were really bad. That's why they're in these positions to draft a quarterback high. So I really did like Brent's point on, you know, we used to see Brady sat, Rodgers sat. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think the expectation should be for a rookie quarterback to come out here and be incredible. I understand. We saw Joe Burrow get out there, and but he is one of kind. I mean, right? Not everybody can do that, and it's not fair to expect that from everybody. So, I mean, I think when you're looking at, yeah, he got drafted in the second round, you also got an offensive lineman who you hope can block for him for the next 10 years, right? So I thought that was a good level-headed point that Brent brought up.
Yeah, I thought so too. Let's go back to the phones. Chris in Atlanta wants to weigh in. Chris, what's up?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. All right, so yes, I believe that the success of Rand Carthen and Mike Ripple is inherently tied to Will Levis. I think any time you draft a quarterback with either the first or your second round pick, there is that notion that he is going to start for you. The other side of that coin is it's inherent upon Rand Carthen to go get the talent to surround Will Levis with. I mean, Michelle, you saw what the talent that he has around him in year one when he was really good, and then you saw what happens when he doesn't have the talent around him in year two, that there was a major drop-off. So it's inherent upon Rand to go get the talent to surround him with. And I think it's a good thing that he's going to sit behind Tannehill, but I think in that meantime, he has got to go get the talent to help him succeed. I mean, we saw Joe Burrow in his first year. You know, he had a good wide receiving crew, but the moment you toss in Ja'Marr Chase, it elevated that to Super Bowl status. You had Patrick Mahomes. The moment you put Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt around him, that elevated that to Super Bowl status. So you need those players to help your guy reach his maximum efficiency of talent. And I think until that happens, the story on Will Levis is going to continue to be unwritten. So, and we've seen what happens when you get a quarterback, but then you don't surround him with the capable talent with the Titans. So that's all I got to say. Just want to hear your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. I mean, I think he makes some good points too on it. It's the talent around Will Levis is going to be the key in all of this, and that's going to be the next step. And you know, as Rand Carthen and Mike Vrabel continue to evaluate this roster, they're going to have to figure out how to make it better. Now, this year, I don't know how much better they're going to make it. There's you know, obviously going to be some veterans that may get released. They can make some trades potentially. They might hit on some of these undrafted guys. I feel like there's an undrafted free agent every year that makes us go, oh, you know, at training camp. So that could potentially happen. But ultimately, this is going to be a multi-year process, I believe.
Yeah, Chase, I believe too. And I think, you know, an important mention, I know we talk about him transferring from Penn State to the SEC to Kentucky. He wasn't the starting quarterback when he got there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Joey Gatewood and Bo Allen, who both were there when he came. And, you know, the players wanted him. They advocated for him to be the starting quarterback, along with Liam Cohen, who was the offensive coordinator at the time. So, you know, when you talk about leadership, I know there's been a lot of stuff just, you know, saying he's cocky and things like this, that. But when you talk about in the locker room leadership, I mean, I think that speaks a lot. In that 2021 season, the team was advocating for him to be their quarterback.
615-737-1025. More of your calls and texts. And there's an interesting text that we just got that I'm going to ask this question to Michelle and the rest of you coming up next. Also, the receiver room. We got to continue to talk about that here on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Rand, there's still a lot of work to be done, but looking back on your first draft as the general manager of the Tennessee Titans, how do you feel about how the process went, and how do you feel about how the roster is constructed now that the draft is in the rear view?
I think the process was, you know, it was a good process. It was efficient, and it was the combination of, you know, the way I've done things, the way Chad's done things, and the way things have been done here. You know, for me, I forever say I'm fortunate to come in with the culture that's already established, with the work that Mike's put in here and what it means and what it looks like to be a Tennessee Titan. So instead of coming in with a new head coach, new GM, where you have to try to establish these things, you know, this was already established. And then my history and how I was brought up in this league was under the same system that J. Rob implemented here. So I didn't have to come in and learn a new language. You know, I knew the language and was able to just insert myself and understand how to, how the things in the system were set up. So I was, you know, I was lucky to come into the situation that I did. You know, again, like we talked about with the roster, it's not complete yet in terms of, you know, making moves. We're going to continue to, you know, evaluate, you know, guys as they come through. You know, we weren't the only team drafted this past weekend, so, you know, other teams are going to have to continue to make moves to fill out their roster, which means players are going to come available for us. And we'll continue to do the work to make sure that we get the best, you know, 90 players in the camp to allow us to make the best decision and put the best 53 on the field come September.
Ran Carthon yesterday on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Mike Vrabel going to join us at 10:15, Titans head coach. Looking forward to that discussion with him. But he is right. They do have some holes to fill still. And as I said previously, I think this is probably going to be a multi-year process to get this, especially the offensive side of the ball. And that's the tough part is the defense is still pretty darn good. So the defense could probably steal some games for them. But they averaged, I think, 17 points a game last year.
About, yep.
I feel like right now they might do worse.
Well, I mean, let's also remember, too, that for – half of the season Malik Willis was running the offense.
Yeah,
so
true.
That also, I believe, factors a lot into, you know, the amount of points that they did score in this. And I think that that's something to point out too. I mean, if you had Ryan Tannehill in there healthy for the entire season, I mean, I definitely think that'd be not high, maybe 23, maybe 24, but the offense would have looked night and day different.
So the text that I was referencing was from Wes in Clarksville. And he said, do you all think Levis will have a better career than Tannehill? And, you know, my initial answer to that is I have no idea. I have no way to answer that right now. But I think it is – it's one of those that's going to be in the back of everybody's mind. And what's interesting about that is we've tied so much to Ryan Tannehill, and he's only been here, what, 4 years, I think? Five?
Yeah.
And he was traded for nothing, and – the team that originally drafted him basically was paying him so the Titans would take him, and then he ends up being the guy. You just got lightning in a bottle. That's mm-hmm. what it was. But if you think about it, and this is what's crazy to me, but when I look at the history of the Titans, not factoring the Oilers in, just the Titans, he's probably the second best quarterback they've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, and his 2019 season could be the best quarterback play that – the Tennessee Titans have ever seen.
Yeah.
Just looking at, you know, what he did in the 2019 season. And, you know, to Wes's point, I do think it's unfair to predict that now, but it kind of brings up a topic that we talked about before the draft. And I said, if you could guarantee you would get Ryan Tannehill or Kirk Cousins level mm-hmm. quarterback play with your whoever you choose to draft in this quarterback class, would you take it?
Right.
Because, you know, so often people are, well, they're not Joe Burrow or they're not Patrick Mahomes. Listen, if everybody could get those guys, they would. If you can get a guy like Ryan Tannehill or Kirk Cousins who've been, you know, very consistent over, you know, I mean, we'll take Miami and we'll take Washington out of it. We'll just look at them now. But even just for how long that they've been in the league and been able to have a starting job, that's really hard to do. Especially with the Baker Mayfields out there and the Sam Darnolds, guys who, you know, are projected to be very, very successful, but seem to find themselves as a backup position and going around, you know, different teams. But Ryan Tannehill and Kirk Cousins, if you can get that type of quarterback play, drafting a quarterback, I mean, that's successful. Yeah. I know it's very easy to look at some of the performances, and people are going to draw back to the Cincinnati game. You can't get over the hump. Well, I mean, a lot of teams, I could tell you that the Colts these last 5 years probably would wish Ryan Tannehill was their quarterback.
Sure.
And, you know, what about Washington? I mean, there are so many teams who haven't been able to figure it out that to project that Will Levis's ceiling or career would be better than Ryan Tannehill's. I mean, that's pretty hard to do.
Let me ask this. Is this offense, because I think we both agree the defense is going to be pretty good. You got Landry coming back, that front seven led by Jeffrey Simmons. You know what they're, or that defensive front, they're pretty darn good. So I feel pretty good about the defense. The only question mark I might have is still the corner, you know, with cornerback. But overall, I feel pretty good about them. The offense, okay. The offensive line is improved. Is it fixed? I don't know.
On paper, it looks fixed, but
I mean, I don't know. I need to see it. I really like, you know, I like the Dillard move because it's a low risk, high reward. You know, I hear Jared say that he was a bust. I'm not going to say that. I just think that what happened is they ended up drafting somebody that was better than him, and he lost his spot. So that's how I view that. Let's see what he can do here.
Whether also the best offensive line in the league by
right,
far.
Right, exactly. So I like that move. You get Brunskill from San Francisco. I think that's a good move there. I believe Petit Frere is going to improve. I think he's going to take a big step from year one to year two. And then obviously you're bringing Skoronski in. And the biggest concern I have on the offensive line is center, if I'm being honest. That is it, with Aaron Brewer, and just because of his size. That's my biggest concern. Okay. Running back, I feel pretty good about the running back position. Derrick Henry, and then obviously they've added Spears, and then you got Hassan Haskins in there as well. I feel good about the running back room. I think they got something to work with there. Tight end. I feel better about the tight end group. Still maybe some questions, but I think if you open up the playbook and you're giving Chig Okonkwo more opportunities this year, Chig can be a star in this league. Feel better there. The question on everybody's mind is going to be receiver, mm-hmm. because can Treylon Burks take the step to be that stud receiver and that go-to number one? And can somebody step up that's on this roster now, whether it's Kyle Phillips or NWI or an undrafted guy or Colton Dowell that they just drafted in the seventh round, you know, McMath, or do they still need to go out and find somebody? That's the biggest question mark when it comes to the offense. Are they a receiver? Are they a really good receiver away from having a good offense?
I mean, there's still time too, right? It's May 2nd today. I think you laid out all of the areas of concern on this offense. And I mean, you know, to your Andre Dillard point, I think although he wasn't a starter on that Eagles offensive line, which was probably the best offensive line in football last year, he got to learn behind those guys. And he also got to learn by Jeff Stoutland, one of the best offensive line coaches in the NFL. 11th season with the Eagles, you know, the most tenured coach on their staff. So, right, that's a plus. I know you don't know how it's going to turn out and how all of these guys on the offensive line are going to work together, but I think they've done what people have been asking them to do and what Mike Vrabel said at the end of the year. He said, you know, we need to protect our quarterback, right? You can't put all of it on Ryan Tannehill when, you know, he doesn't even have a second to hand off the ball to Derrick Henry. And that's the type of – he wants a offensive line that can protect Ryan Tannehill, because in 2019 when he had an offensive line, it was one of his best seasons. And yes, though, in that 2019 season, he had more weapons. He had A.J. Brown, obviously Derrick Henry. He had Corey Davis, right? Could you get – no, not an elite-level wide receiver like an A.J. Brown, but can you feel confident that a Treylon Burks takes the next step up? And in these next couple of weeks – does a wide receiver get maybe cut from a roster somewhere who's been in the league and who can be efficient for you? That could change the game. What do these guys look like in training camp? And I think, you know, a pivotal part for their personal career, you know, Racy McMath, can he do it this year? Because it's on him if he wants to be able to stay in the NFL or not. And he needs to get reps and he needs to stay healthy. I mean, some of the things we saw from him in training camp last year were a bit promising, but then, you know, when the season rolled around, he wasn't able to stay on the field. Kyle Phillips, sixth round last year, didn't didn't waste a lot to get him. He was supposed to be your return guy, speedy, right. Shifty. He was cooking people in training camp. I mean, he was breaking ankles left and right out there. So what does he look like another year? But it's fair to ask because a position that you wanted to be dealt with in the draft wasn't dealt with till last round.
Yep. And that's something they're going to continue to have to work on as they move forward. Again, Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach, going to join us at 10:15 on the show. Looking forward to that conversation with him. But coming up next, there was a Game 7 last night, and it disappointed. And I was wrong. We'll discuss coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Now Palat takes it away from Kako, gets it to Hughes. It's a 2-on-1 with Lindgren back. Hughes goes cross ice. They score! Eric Halla! It's 3-0!
Hey, I know that name. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Kieser, the reporter. And yes, that is how it sounded last night. From the New Jersey Devils radio network, the Devils win it 4-0 in Game 7 to advance to the next round. I was wrong. I thought the Rangers would get it done, and they didn't. P.K. Subban wearing his Ric Flair-type New Jersey Devils robe and shoving it in the face of Messier last night on ESPN, which I got to say, they do a great job. Chris Chelios doesn't really add too much to it, in my opinion, but I think Subi and Messier are awesome.
Yeah, I love when, especially you guys here. I wasn't here when P.K. Subban was here, but
I'm so sad
hearing
you missed that.
Hearing just the personality he had, not only to just the media but the fans in the press conferences, and then to be able to see it translate to ESPN. I mean, it just makes the broadcast so fun. I believe. I mean, there are so many former players, NFL too, for instance, the best broadcast in TV is easily inside the NBA with Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal and Kenny and Ernie. I mean, it makes it fun.
I was watching that the other night, and Shaq and Kenny were kind of getting a little heated.
Shaq looks like he lost some weight.
He
looks good.
Yeah, he looks good. Kenny was talking about Anthony Davis, something about Anthony Davis, and Shaq was just like, man, you weren't saying that a few years ago. Like, you were calling him out. Like, no, I wasn't. Like, yeah, you were. Pull the
Shaq
tape.
Shaq keeps the receipts.
He was like, pull the tape.
He keeps the receipts. Oh, he does. I love it.
He does. And Chuck's just sitting there laughing.
Yeah,
Ernie's laughing.
As always. No, but best.
What I love about that show is how it is just very chill and laid back. And Ernie does such a great job navigating that, which is not easy by any means. And they just kind of let him go. You know, I'm sure there's some sort of plan, but they just let them react and let them be themselves. And I feel like ESPN is trying to do that with some of their hockey coverage, and adding a personality like Subban is the best way to do it. I mean, even Messier can be a little uptight at times, but I think Subban has kind of brought that out of him. You know, some of the older guys, because that in like TNT on their broadcast, you know, they have Biz Nasty, Paul Bissonnette.
Gretzky.
And Gretzky is on sometimes, but Anson Carter is a part of it, you know. But so I think they've done a good job of putting those teams together. But anyway, the Devils advance. Now we got round two that will get underway tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Florida and Toronto. Everybody had that one. I know.
Well, and now Toronto has the best odds to win it all, which makes me nervous for Toronto fans. Let's not look past this series.
I think you're going to get an all-Canadian Cup final.
Wow. Well, that would be...
I don't know. Nick, do you know off the top of your head the last time that happened? Or has that happened?
I was about to go look it up. So give me one second.
I mean,
I want to say it's been a while for that.
I'm rooting for Edmonton because of Matias Ekholm.
Sure.
And I need more...
Well, if they win, we'll get Ekki on. I mean, that'll happen.
Yeah.
That will for sure happen. So that would be cool.
I mean, think about just Canada in general if that happened. I mean, would the entire country burn down?
Okay, so it's been since 1993 that a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. Can you name that team? Because they are currently not actually in the postseason.
Canucks?
Since
Canucks? No, Canucks have never won. 1993. One prominent goaltender was still playing.
Montreal?
Yep.
Patrick Roy?
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay. That's the last time the Canadian team won the Cup?
Yep.
Holy crap.
Yep.
30 years ago. Exactly. Yeah. He said 1993.
Yeah. So I wonder the last time. I mean, Edmonton's been in one, haven't they? Calgary's been in one.
Yes, that would be correct. Because the Oilers lost to the Hurricanes, yes. Right? Yeah.
Yep. Calgary lost to Tampa?
Yes, because Crispy was part of that, right?
No.
No, that was after.
Yeah, Crispy would have been gone at that point. Crispy won the Cup in 89 with Calgary.
Right.
I mean, then Toronto hadn't been since the 90s.
Mm-mm, no.
Yeah, so it's certainly been a minute, but I feel good about. I mean, New Jersey and Carolina is going to be a fun series. The one team out of the West that I wouldn't write off is Dallas. Dallas has, I mean, they have the skill and they have the goaltending. My one concern with Edmonton is their goaltending.
Yeah.
And you know that Vegas might beat them up that way. Seattle's been scrappy, but I think Dallas takes care of them. So. Game one's tonight, Toronto and Florida, that's on ESPN at 6, and then Dallas and Seattle tonight at 8:30, also on ESPN. Then tomorrow you got New Jersey and Carolina, Edmonton and Vegas. So that is the second round of the NHL. In the NBA.
Really quick before you head to the NBA, Paul on our text line, 1967 Toronto versus Montreal.
Okay, so that would have been, I mean, original six basically.
Yeah, which doesn't necessarily count. So it's been forever.
Yeah, okay. Here in Chris in Atlanta says the Oilers lost in 06, Flames lost in 04. So I think we were right on that. 06 was Carolina, and 04 would have been Tampa. Yeah, interesting. He also says the last time we had an all-Canadian Stanley Cup final was 89, Flames and Canadians. I think he's right.
Okay, actually, yeah,
and that's when right. That's when Crispy won the Cup.
Crispy
won the Cup as a coach, I should say. He had already had two as a player. NBA tonight.
I'm excited for Miami
and the Knicks, Lakers and Golden State. I think I agree with you. Golden State wins the series. Lakers win tonight. Yeah. Actually, no, I don't. I think Lakers win the series.
Okay.
I think the Lakers win. I think I'm a believer.
Also,
now.
I think really quick too. We are so Draymond had an awesome quote about this on his podcast. We are so quick to jump to. The Lucas and the Trey Young and all of these younger guys coming up, De'Aaron Fox, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like all of these young guys, we're so eager to be like, okay, they're going to be the ones who are going to take out Steph and all these guys. But, can we just put some respect on, LeBron James?
Put some respect on.
And Steph Curry, who, these teams where Lakers are out early this year. Are they even going to make the playoffs? LeBron's too old. Everybody's saying, nope, they beat the 2 seed, and there you get the Warriors beating the 3 seed, and you get a Warriors Lakers matchup in the second round. Whew. I am excited. Not missing a second of this series.
No, I'm not either. And last night, Philly goes up 1-0 on Boston in a tight game, and then Denver takes a 2-0 series lead over Phoenix. Chris Paul left the game, did not return. So that one's interesting.
Chris Paul, injuries. They hurt him, and he's their main ball handler, obviously.
Injuries hurt,
true point guard. But him specifically, he always seems to get hurt in the postseason, and it just, it impacts their team a lot. Jokic, that's what people keep saying. If he, wins MVP, but he can't get it done.
Yeah.
Can't get it done in the postseason. Is this the year?
Well, they're up 2-0. So that certainly helps. So we'll have a little bit more on that. We'll give our best bets at the end of the show on the NHL and the NBA. We'll do that later. Mike Vrabel coming up at 10:15. But coming up next, there is some news involving Taylor Lewan. We'll discuss that here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.